Now, the best ways for dealing with difficult preschoolers. What to do to avoid supermarket tantrums, refusals to go to bed and general defiance. Dr. Louise Kewen is the Deputy Director of the Parenting Research Group at Auckland University, which has been trialling interventions based on the Positive Parenting Program, known as Triple P, since 2008. Triple P was created at the University of Queensland 20 years ago and is now used in 25 countries. It involves arming parents with strategies to deal with a range of situations and behavioural difficulties. The most recent trials in Auckland have involved efforts to get fathers more involved in parenting courses, which the researchers have found greatly improving the behaviour of children and the family's overall relationship. Louise Kewen's in the Auckland studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Catherine.
It's, since the beginning of time, it's the fact, isn't it, people have all their own personal ways or techniques or strategies, and it's passed from generation to generation, and certainly there have been copious numbers of books written about it. What is different about Triple P? Is it the fact that different strategies and techniques are actually sort of run through analysis to see what's effective and what's not?
Yes, it's one of the most evidence-based parenting programs in the world. It's based on 30 years' worth of research. So we know what works, and it uses effective parenting strategies.
So the particular topic we're talking about today, and I think much of your work may have been based on the preschool age, is that
That's right.
It is an age that is particularly challenging and also very important. Your responses will have an impact for good or other.
Yes, I think preschool age children, that's a very important stage of development. And as a developmental psychologist, it's a period of development I've had a particular interest in. But the Triple P program, is applicable from birth through to the teen years. Most of my work is focused on the preschool years.
It's also an interesting time, isn't it? Because as we said, you've got the so-called terrible twos, the toddler years, right through to, right knocking on the door of school. And I imagine a large part of what's happening here is an individual personality is finding its way to the fore.
Yes, I think children's temperament certainly comes into how they behave. And so that's something that parents need to be aware of when they're faced with a child who may seem to be behaving differently to other children in their families. So they need to take that into account and thinking about how to best manage their child's behaviour.
So there's the sort of the normal, it's a time of fairly predictable behaviour generally, but you're looking at children for whom the behaviour is causing a problem. It's funny, we were just talking this morning about first language of children and, first words and sentences being strung together in one phrase. Was do it, two words,
yes,
from one colleague's do it, and said with some force. So all these things are coming together, that ability to communicate, having a personality, begin to emerge and a whole lot of the things that are happening as well. What then do we perceive as normal behaviour for the toddlers and the preschoolers?
Well, I think some of those things you just described are normal behaviours. It's very normal for toddlers to want to assert their independence, and that's where parents can have some difficulties around setting boundaries and setting appropriate rules for what children can and can't do. So there's a number of key principles that the Triple P program teaches parents, which are very applicable here. One of those is to ensure a safe, interesting environment. So you want to make the environment safe for your toddler so that they can still explore and have interesting things to play with. Another principle is just to create a positive learning environment. So, you spend brief moments interacting and talking to them in a positive way. So that brings out those language skills that you were talking about. But also focusing on when they're doing things well and commenting on that, and having a range of strategies in place for dealing with behaviour that's outside the boundaries that you want the child to be doing.
So how do you? Give us some examples of what can typically happen and how the program is suggesting, what the program is suggesting are successful techniques for dealing with it.
Okay, so let's think about going shopping. That's a situation that's often challenging for a lot of parents. What the program would suggest is that you need to set up a plan for and talk that through with the child about what the expectations are for when you go shopping. So you talk to the child about some rules. So walk quietly down the aisle, stay close to mum and dad, don't ask mum and dad if you want to touch something, and then you tell the child, this is what we expect when you go to the supermarket next time, and if you follow those strategies, behaviours, we can do something positive afterwards, like go to the park or have an extra story. Now, when you're in the supermarket, you pick up on the positive things the child's doing and give them positive feedback for walking quietly in the aisle or staying close to you, and also give them interesting activities to do while you're in the supermarket, like helping them choose the items off the supermarket aisle, and maybe have their own shopping list. Talk to them about the colours and the different products they're seeing, depending on the child's age. So you'd vary that depending on what's suitable for the child's age. Now, if the child doesn't follow the rule, and you will have explained to them in beforehand what would happen, so if they are running around, you may just have to give them a bit of quiet time, like get them to stand next to you in the supermarket aisle until they do calm down. So having a plan like that has been found to be effective in those difficult-to-deal-with situations.
Why do they so often lose it in supermarkets? I straight away wonder, because often it's sort of they're getting tired, like they've been out in the car, possibly there's been something else going on, they've been picked up somewhere or whatever, and it's the final stop on the way home. So sometimes they're tired, sometimes they're hungry. But also, is it just all that stimulation at once that just overwhelms
them? Yes, I think it's both of those things. And there's so many temptations there, I think, for children. I think it's very challenging for parents having to take their children to supermarket these days with so many temptations there.
Right at their height and their eye level.
Exactly, yes. Although I did notice in the supermarket that I was in the other day, they had aisles specifically without sweets and things in them, which I think is great for parents.
If the tantrum occurs, and someone has that complete meltdown, then every aisle can hear it. You're not going to stop that. When a child's, tipped into that, that's just going to run its life, right? And you've just got to, frankly, switch off from, anyone who's giving you strange looks, because actually most people aren't. Most people get it. And what, just sort of wait it out until you can get out of there?
Yes, you can. Or you can take them outside and wait till they calm down if you're not comfortable waiting for them to calm down in the supermarket.
They sort of just run out of energy in the end, don't they?
That's right.
What about defiant behaviours such as refusing to eat certain foods or any foods, if there's been some rules established around the dinner table and how that happens and when you're allowed to leave and asking when to leave? How is this about getting routines again, just persisting until you get some routines underway?
Yes, that's right. Again, it's establishing those ground rules, having some simple ground rules that you talk about and have the child have some input into so that they know the expectations and what will happen if those expectations or those rules aren't followed. So you can remind them the first time that they don't follow the rule, prompt them to say, what should you be doing in this situation? And if they tell you the rule, you praise them. And then if they keep persisting with that behaviour, that really depends on how serious the behaviour is, what consequence you might use then. So it may be that, for example, if the children are fighting over toys, you may just remove the toy for 5 minutes so that they learn that it's not acceptable to fight over toys. Or if it's more serious behaviour, not following an instruction after you've given them several warnings, you might just put them in a quiet time for a short period of time, which is removing them to the side of the room away from the activity that's going on.
One of the things that has got through to me, actually, particularly with younger children, particularly those aged between 2 and 3, is you need to persist. They don't get it straight away. Cognitively, they're still getting how to get things, and you need to persist with the rules and just patiently keep coming back to it and coming back to it and coming back to it and coming back to it until it sinks in. It doesn't happen after a week or two.
That's right. I mean, that's a key principle of the Triple P program. Teachers, you know, clear, calm, consistent and feedback and instruction to the child. And so if the child knows that you're going to be consistent and things stay the same and these are the consequences if rules are broken, they will get it.
And it's not even defiance necessarily. It's just, especially at that stage of development, they all at a different point click. So it's not that they're necessarily deliberately defying you. It's just it takes a certain amount of time to sink in that this is the way it is, these are the boundaries, and this is how things are going to happen.
That's right, and it's partly to do with their level of cognitive development. So a child who's still in the early stages of language development perhaps doesn't have that grasp of language, and you have to keep the instructions fairly simple so that they know they can follow what you're trying to convey to them.
A listener asks, time out for tantrums was recommended in the 1990s. I look back in horror and feel very guilty about using this with my wonderful middle child who's had real struggles in young adulthood. Could there be a connection?
I think it's pretty difficult to make connection with the use of time out and what's happening in adulthood, because so many things will have happened in between that time. And time out, if used effectively, does work. I think what happens is that there's a lot of misinformation out there about what timeout is and how to use it.
Well, how long is timeout for starters, and what is an effective timeout? Because what is it that you're trying to do? Are you trying to calm someone down? Are you trying to punish? Are you trying to get them to the point where it's more interesting to come back and join everybody else than to sulk? What are you trying to achieve with it?
You're trying to get them to calm down until they're ready to come back into the situation. So perhaps if they're having a tantrum or they're being aggressive towards their brother or their sister. So it's just removing them from that situation. And you will have told them in advance that this is what will happen. And you put them in a safe room where there's not a lot of interesting things to do. How long you leave them there will depend on the child's age. So it may be a very short period of time for a young, say a two-year-old, less than a minute. But and as soon as they've calmed down and stopped misbehaving, you bring them back into the situation. You don't comment on the fact that they've calmed down. You just let them reintegrate back into what they were doing and praise them when you see some good behaviour occurring.
What of behaviours that are very that are concerning, whether it's, I don't know, very aggressive swearing or behaviour or hitting other kids or whatever, and you're trying to get on top of that?
I guess if you've got serious concerns about ongoing behaviour with your children and you're finding it difficult to manage using the sorts of strategies that I've just described, it may mean that you do need to go and seek professional help. For example, the Triple P parenting website has got a links there where you can find out what's available for help in your area. That's TripleP parenting.net.
What of this recent trial involving getting more dads involved in the courses? How did that work?
Well, I'd just like to take a step back and tell you that internationally there's much less known about the effectiveness of parenting programs for dads compared to mums. So this piece of work was groundbreaking in that it showed that when you take steps to involve dads in parenting programs, the program can be just as effective for dads as it is for mums. Now, parents want to know that parenting programs are effective and have got a good evidence base, and we have quite a lot of evidence around that for Triple P, but not as much for dads. And there's a whole range of reasons for that. It can be some of them were around the timing of programs, perhaps during the day when fathers weren't available to attend with mothers. Maybe it's also because of different perceptions of mothers and fathers around whether programs was worth for them or the worthwhile, whether it was worthwhile coming along to programs. So what we did in this bit of work was to first of all survey fathers and also conduct some focus groups with fathers to find out what it was that they specifically wanted in a parenting program and what how they'd like it delivered. So some of the key things that came out from that was that fathers are really interested in things like how to encourage social skills, to know about how important their role was as a parent. And so we integrated some of those findings into the Level 4 PPP program, which is a 5-week face-to-face group session, and it includes 3 telephone consultations with a practitioner. As well as that, we did things like deliberately include dads in the advertisements, so tried to make the advertisements attractive to dads. We got dads involved in the interviews about what it meant taking part in the program. And we made efforts all the way through to keep both mums and dads involved by including them in all aspects of the program, in the telephone consultations.
What were the results of doing so?
Well, the data showed that after the parent taking part in the parenting program and at 6 months later, both mothers and fathers were reporting positive changes in their children's behaviour, in their own parenting, and in their feeling of being a competent parent. So they're more confident around their parenting. And so I think what this does show that, you know, services do need to make more efforts to engage fathers, because we know that fathers are very important to children's development. There's a growing body of research which shows that fathers are just as important as mothers, and yet some of the parenting programs and the services for families haven't caught up with that message, and perhaps need to do more to look at how to effectively engage both parents.
Louise, thank you. Louise Kewin.